In her new novel, writer Mona Awad confronts an issue that's deeply familiar to millions of people, including me, and maybe even you. It's body image. The book is called 13 Ways of Looking at a Fat Girl, and it tells the story of Lizzie, a young woman obsessed by how she looks and how much she weighs. Awad writes each chapter with deep insight and gutsy humor. I mean, just listen to this scene when Lizzie steps into the most fraught space for anyone struggling with body image, a dressing room.
Despite my better judgment, I'm in the fitting room wrestling with the von Furstenberg again. I've thrown it over my head, and I'm attempting to wedge my arms through the armholes, even though it's got my shoulders and ribcage in a vice grip. This is the moment of deepest despair. This is the moment she always chooses to knock on the door. I brace myself for the sound of her voice, all of my nerve endings like cats ready to pounce. When she speaks, I hear her disdain, bright as a bell. How are we doing in here? We. She means me and the von Furstenberg. The von Furstenberg and I. She saw me out of the corner of her exquisitely lined eye going to the back of the store to retrieve it between the frigid Eileen Fishers and the smug Max's Rias, and she disapproves. She knows the von Furstenberg is a separate entity, that it and I will never be one. Fine, I say. I remain absolutely still, try not to sound breathless, like all is well, just a regular shopping trip. Oh, good, she says. You let me know if you need anything. But in her voice I hear, give it up, fat girl.
That's Mona Awad reading an excerpt from her new novel, 13 Ways of Looking at a Fat Girl. Tell us a little bit more about Lizzie, the main character of the book.
Well, I started with this idea of looking at a woman through the lens of this term, fat girl. You know, it's a very provocative term. You know, a lot of images come to mind right away when we think of what a fat girl is. And I really wanted with Lizzie to challenge those assumptions and to kind of subvert them. In this book, you know, Lizzie starts off thinking that she's overweight. She goes through a kind of transformation where she loses, but she's still in many ways branded by this term and can't escape it.
Right. You know, it's interesting because you, in telling Lizzie's story, you also write about something, or I should say so many things, that will feel so profoundly familiar, I think, to people, anyone who reads the book, because Lizzie's thoughts about her weight, her body image, affect everything she does, almost every thought she has. I mean, it's kind of unrelenting.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I was going for. but yeah, I mean, I think I've observed, you know, I mean, body image is something I've struggled with. I don't know a woman or a man who hasn't at some point in their life dealt with these kinds of issues. Anybody with a body, really, who has to look in the mirror, stand beside other people, compare themselves, be in this culture. And I wanted to kind of observe just how deeply this kind of struggle can affect so many different aspects of our lives and our relationships.
Right.
Fat girl is not really, I think, so much a problem of flesh. It's more of a state of mind that you can inhabit long after, you know, any kind of transformation that you make to your body. It's a mentality that you can carry with you.
You sort of ask through Lizzie, Lizzie's character, you ask questions about how is it that we come to inhabit this state of mind. I mean,
mm-hmm.
obviously, a huge amount of it has to do with the constant messaging.
Absolutely.
That people, men and women, but of course especially women, get about their bodies, geez, from the time they're practically born.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also wonder how much we were exploring whether or not, you know, we as individuals are part of that. It's not just the messaging that comes to us, but our willingness to accept that messaging.
Absolutely. I mean, that something that was very important to me in this book was not to kind of tie her body issues to any specific gaze, you know. So she's not identifying herself or labeling herself fat girl because of one man or one friend or her mother, you know, or a salesperson who's perhaps quietly judging her because she's gone into a dressing room with a dress that won't fit, you know. It's more complicated than that. It's also internal
yeah.
as much as it's external, and it's the dynamic between those two that I think is creating this fat girl.
One of the ways in which you explored that internal part, right. I noticed that she changes how she wants to be called through the book.
Yeah.
She goes from Elizabeth to Lizzie,
right.
Beth.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Well, I chose the name Elizabeth in part because I could do that. You know, that name is kind of like this wonderful house that has all these little rooms in it, like Liz, Beth, you know, Lizzie. Because I think that she was trying desperately to kind of pin down her transformation and make it somehow permanent. If I change my body, I change myself, you know? But the book is constantly challenging that.
Yeah. Also, I wonder why, I think I've got this right, you never actually write down at any point in time of the book how much Lizzie's weighing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That was a very intentional choice on my part. I think that, again, it's coming from that idea that was very important to me in this book, that fat is kind of a state of mind. And fat is so relative. I mean, it just depends on, I think, how we feel about ourselves that day, who we're standing next to, you know, so many different factors that are both internal and external. So I wanted it to keep it ambiguous so that any woman, or man for that matter, could put themselves inside Lizzie's skin.
Mm. I wonder how many people listening to this are thinking, I know exactly what you mean. Because, I mean, the other thing I really liked about the book is that we don't just get to know Lizzie in a small period of her life. I mean, it's from her teenage years through when she gets married, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we kind of grow with her,
yeah.
As well. But there's certain things that never leave her, even at the end of the book.
Yeah, I mean, it's that question coming up again that I really wanted to ask with this book, which is, if we change ourselves physically, if we transform physically, do we actually transform? I think transformation is far more complicated than that, as anybody who's gone through any kind of transformation knows. You're still having to reckon with your former self. You can never really leave that former self behind. That former self is still, to some degree, informing how you are in the world, informing how you see yourself, informing your relationships. And that's certainly the case for Lizzie.
Is it the case for you?
Well, I think, you know, body image, I mean, it's something I have certainly struggled with. I think that it's a hard thing for women especially, but I think men too, to step outside of. I think it's something, as you yourself observed, is constantly getting reinforced by culture.
I mean, let me ask you more directly.
Yeah.
Let me just ask it this way.
Yeah.
I went back and read a 2010 magazine article that you wrote about you and your mother.
Yeah.
And the years that both of you spent
dieting.
Yeah. And it was such a brave article.
Oh, thank you.
And so
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
So hard to read.
Yeah.
Because you talk about how your mother wired her teeth shut at one point in time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she did. I mean, that was a very common, actually creepily common practice in the 80s, you know, as it was a dieting fad.
How old were you
when she did that? I was 5.
I mean, you wrote that my mother came home grinning at me through clenched wired teeth. She spoke with a terrible metallic lisp. I thought she was a monster. Mom's going to be this thin, she said, and she showed me with her hands, palms facing each other, nearly together, as in prayer.
Yeah.
You were 5.
I was 5, yeah. Yeah. It's quite young to observe something like that. And I do think that, you know, if you witness that kind of thing as a child, it definitely shapes your outlook on, you know, your own body. And I think it's very, very difficult to escape. But I also don't think that my mother, you know, was an exception to the rule or something. I mean, I've met so many women who have dealt with these kinds of things. Perhaps they didn't go to the extreme of wiring their teeth, but it really informs how they are in the world and the choices they make and how they live their lives. And a lot of life gets used up in this kind of struggle.
By no means is she the exception. Every person I know has had various forms of struggles with their body image. And I just, you know, I mean, you write about how in your own life, you were 9 when you started your first diet sort of officially.
Yeah.
Just a couple years after that. And then the This is probably going somewhere where you didn't expect it to.
No, I did not.
And I apologize, but I feel like it's really important because Lizzie's story, what I wanted to ask you is how much of it, it's written so beautifully. Is it, how much is it because you yourself went through these same struggles?
Well, you know, I mean, I wrote that nonfiction piece, you know, many years ago. And I felt at the end of it, you know, I talked about my own issues with dieting. I talked about my mother's issues with dieting. I talked about these social trends. But it was not satisfying to me to write about it in that way. I was far more interested in how body image affects our relationships with our friends, with our family, you know, with our mothers, you know, with ourselves ultimately. And those moments when between people, when body image is rearing its head yet again, you know, those moments of like rage and vulnerability and desire that you experience when you're dealing with this kind of battle with your body, that was what was interesting to me. And nonfiction didn't really give me the license that I so desperately wanted, the freedom that I so desperately wanted to really be able to explore that the way that would have been satisfying to me. But fiction and creating another character, another set of characters, another world, let me do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. If I may, the novel is a work of fiction and explores all the things that you just said. But I feel like it's, for me as a reader now, it's made that much more powerful knowing that that the place where it comes from is your own authentic experience. Because, right. I mean, I was, again, looking at this 2010 article where you write from, you know, the age of 9 through part of your adulthood, you tried it, like, virtually every popular diet known to man. I mean, everything from the Beverly Hills diet, I don't know, Slim Fast, Weight Watchers, Jenny Craig, all of it. These are all so familiar to everybody.
Right.
And so did your mother as well.
Yeah. I mean, not just my mother and me, but pretty much, you know, every woman that I came across in the 80s and in the 90s. And frankly, now, I mean, I can't believe how, I would like to believe that things have changed to some extent and that we've gone past it in some ways. But when I'm in restaurants and bars and I overhear conversations between women, when I go to clothing stores and I overhear conversations in dressing rooms, I'm shocked at just how much it's still mm-hmm. a problem. It mm-hmm. still informs the bulk of our thinking. But that's something I would like to see changed. And that's something that, you know, that's one of the motivating factors behind this book. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to call attention to the fact that, yeah, this is a label that we use to label ourselves and other people, and it's a problem. It's a problem.
Yeah. Your mother died in 2004?
Yes.
She was just 54?
Yes.
You believe she died in part because of what all the dieting mm-hmm. did to her heart?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was definitely a huge part of it. You know, there were other factors involved, but the dieting didn't help. And, yo-yo dieting infamously wreaks havoc on your heart. Absolutely. Okay. So,
what do you think she would have said about the book?
Oh, geez. Well, you know, I hope that she would be happy with it. I hope that she would feel a sense of connection to it. Yeah, I mean, that's above all what I would want. Yeah.
Well, Mona Awad's new novel is 13 Ways of Looking at a Fat Girl. I dare anyone who's reading it to not feel some connection to what's in this book.
Well, thank you for saying that.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, finally, there are incidents and stories that make everything seem so fragile, so precious. And today we were reminded of that when we heard that two students from Northeastern University died in a car accident yesterday. They were traveling in Dubai. Priscilla Perez-Torres and Victoria McGrath were roommates. Priscilla from Puerto Rico, passionate about making a difference in women's health. And Victoria, well, she was a survivor of the Boston Marathon bombing. Shrapnel tore into her leg on that day in 2013, and she almost died, but bystanders and medical workers saved her life. And one of the iconic photographs of that awful day is of Victoria, cradled to safety in the arms of Boston firefighter Jimmy Plourde. Well, Bruce Mendelson, he's the one who tied a tourniquet on Victoria McGrath's leg that day, and he told us that today he can't quite believe that Victoria's gone, because since that April 2013 day, Mendelson and firefighter Jimmy Plourde and two other people who saved Victoria, they all grew very close, like family. And Bruce says he feels like he's lost a sister, a young woman who inspired him every day.
She lived with a vengeance after the marathon. She neither let nor wanted that to define her. We talked about what she was going to do next, where she was traveling, where she wanted to work, where she was interning. And we should look to a future that's of one of hope.
Northeastern President Joseph Aoun said in a statement that Victoria and Priscilla were vibrant, beloved members of the community. Their passing leaves a grievous absence in our community. And we know the entire city today feels the same way. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.